Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Tracy McClure. Coming up over the next half hour, give the gift of prayer for peace in Bethlehem this Christmas. A new Christian radio station for the Holy Land with Vatican Radio's help. And we catch a special glimpse of the Vatican Library, a centuries-old institution which keeps up, if not ahead, of the times. Christmas is fast approaching. On the third Sunday of Advent, we saw the Pope greeting thousands of Roman children and their families for his traditional blessing of the Christ Child figurines that adorn their nativity scenes at home. It was a time to remember the Christ in Christmas, the little babe born in a manger in the town of Bethlehem, where Christians have revered the place of his birth for the last 2,000 years. They are the so-called living stones of the Church in the Holy Land, those who have faithfully carried on Christ's mission and witness through conflict and strife through so many ages. In a sign of solidarity and encouragement to our fellow Christians in the land of Jesus' birth, the International Catholic Peace Organization Pax Christi has organized a prayer and wishes campaign for Advent and Christmas in Bethlehem, and anyone can be a part of it. All you need is a computer and the internet, and you can give the gift of prayer and hope to someone who needs it most. I spoke to the Senior Policy Advisor for the International Secretariat in Brussels, Father Paul Lansu, about the initiative, already on its 11th year.
It is not the first time we are planning this. It is already the 11th consecutive year that we invite all our members worldwide. Not our own Pax Christi members, but also broader than that, worldwide, to email, if possible in English, prayers and wishes for Advent and Christmas in Bethlehem 2010, because of the situation still going on of isolation of the Christians in Bethlehem in particular. So we invited all our members to do that, if possible in English, but we provided also a letter of invitation in 8 different languages, including French, German, Italian, Portuguese, Dutch, and even Japanese, to make use of and to send indeed a very brief but a very hopeful and very warm message to our friends in Bethlehem. And there are our partners, there are different partners working with all these prayers and wishes. They make use of it on different occasions. Not only they will put on the website and will be available for everybody who looks at the website of the Arabic Educational Institute especially, but also these messages and prayers will be used on different occasions in an educational context, especially with youngsters, with women, with interfaith meetings in Bethlehem. And so it is a very educational and a very hopeful project. And we hope that, just as in the past, hundreds or even thousands of messages will come from all over the world to send to Bethlehem and to support especially the Christians on that occasion.
You're asking people also to contribute suggestions of, you know, initiatives, but also how this how peace can be encouraged in the Holy Land.
That is true, because hope remains a key word in the life of the citizens of Bethlehem. But at the same time, people over there, they need more creativity and they need support and they need proposals for more non-violent avenues that can lead to peace and justice for both peoples, Israeli and Palestinians. And that need for creativity on non-violent, active non-violence is certainly needed. And so, yeah, these messages can include ideas, proposals, based on active nonviolence in the context also of the gospel and of the Catholic social teaching. That can be very inspiring for our local friends over there indeed.
Now, we've heard that about the peace talks, but we're getting mixed signals from both sides about their commitment to really seeking peace. Plus, instead of bringing walls down, Israel has begun construction on a new security barrier along the border with Egypt, aimed at keeping out Islamic militants and migrants. With these contrasting messages, what are we supposed to be thinking?
Yeah, it is indeed a very contrasting situation. Partly there are contacts among the governmental representatives of both sides to search for avenues for further peace talks. But the results are not very visible so far. And at the same time, on the ground, it is very clear that, and you gave the example of the fence between Israel and Egypt, that's not very hopeful. And in fact, if you look at longer-term solution, like, for instance, the two-state solution, many objective observers, I think, even supporters of Israel, believe that the two-state solution is no longer viable. And they say, how can a Palestinian state be created where there are so many settlements and bypass roads, exactly in the place it is supposed to exist? So they add that the situation is getting worse, and the refusal to freeze all settlement building, especially in Jerusalem, means no Palestinian state will be possible. So that is indeed the reality on the ground, and that's not very hopeful.
Now, Pax Christi launched this prayer initiative over the Christmas holidays back in the year 2000, as you said before.
Yeah.
What feedback have you received to your past prayer campaigns?
The good thing is, in fact, that this is a very, what you can call a very low-level action possibility. You just need a computer, of course, and an email address, etc. But that means that many individuals worldwide, many parishes, many religious communities, many Christian organizations and many others, they have the possibility to send in that message in a very simple way. That is the strength of this type of initiative. And in the past, we received many, many times good feedback in the sense that people were very happy that they could express themselves. It is also a way of expressing themselves. Individuals or even parishes and communities, they cannot make a difference in Israel-Palestine. That needs to be done by the politicians. But at least the solidarity between Christians from all over the world with our Christian friends in the Holy Land, that type of solidarity needs to be expressed. And I think this action can make a good effort in our relationship and in networking also with our friends over there.
I can think of no more beautiful, special place to spend Christmas than in Bethlehem. And, you know, we have seen pilgrimages to the Holy Land increase, especially this over this past year, 2010. More and more people are going to the Holy Land. However, if you speak to Christians there, local Christians, they'll tell you that they sometimes feel forgotten by the Christians in the West. How important is it for pilgrims to the Holy Land that they actually meet the local Christian community?
That is indeed a very important aspect. The situation is that pilgrimages, mostly they just stay for a couple of hours in Bethlehem, but no longer. And so from an economical point of view, that doesn't make a difference over there. What we have been doing the last couple of years is the initiative of peace pilgrimages. And this year, our Italians, our Germans, the Austrians, the Dutch, the Flemish, the British Pax Christi members, they went for peace pilgrimages, which is in fact also partly the traditional pilgrimage concerning the religious, visiting religious sites and religious inspiration, etc. But at the same time, they have also contacts with people on both sides, working and active on human rights, on peace building, on conflict transformation. And I think the Christians over there, they need that type of contacts as well. They need to be part of the global world and not to be forgotten. And that's why I think pilgrimages in general, but especially peace pilgrimages, are so crucial for the people over there. And we only want to continue to support that idea.
And thanks there to Father Paul Lansu, Senior Policy Advisor at the International Secretariat of Pax Christi. Well, you can send your Christmas message of peace to the Christians in the Holy Land to the Arab Educational Institute at the following email address, info@aeicenter.org. This initiative is internationally supported by the Palestine-Israel Ecumenical Forum of the World Council of Churches, the International Fellowship of Reconciliation, Church and Peace, the Presidency of the Conference of European Justice and Peace Commissions, and the Commission for Justice, Peace, and Integrity of Creation of USGUISG Secretariat. He has to be one of the most enterprising and most energetic people I know. Father Raed Abu Sakhya, the parish priest of Taibe in Palestine, is a former spokesman for the Latin Patriarchate in Jerusalem. He's a big event organizer, fundraiser, and the proud sponsor of the town's impressive olive press and farmers' cooperative that sells olive oil, soaps, and candles to European supermarket chains. Well, his newest project, starting up the first Christian radio station in the Holy Land with Vatican Radio's help. He told me more about it on a recent visit here to Vatican Radio.
We need a Christian voice in the Holy Land. We need to give a Christian voice to the Christians in the Holy Land, especially to cover the whole diocese, which extends over Jordan, Palestine, and Israel. And since there are different radio stations and TV stations in the region, we don't have any Christian radio station. I wanted to do that in Taibe, especially that Taibe is the last and the only entirely Christian village in the whole land, as you know. And it is located at the top of a mountain, 1,000 meters above the level of the Mediterranean Sea, so we can cover the whole region. Our target is the Arabic-speaking community, of course, and we will transmit from Taipei. Hopefully that we will cover from Amman to Gaza to Tel Aviv, almost the whole region, and of course Jerusalem will be included. This will be a Christian voice, but a different voice, which means a voice of peace, of hope, of dialogue, of reconciliation. We will be open to everybody, to the other churches in the whole land. So we will have, we will give a space and time for all the news and celebrations of the other churches. And we will invite them. We have already contacted them to have their own programs on our radio station. It will be open also to the other religions existing in the whole land, mainly Jews and Muslims. And we will try to be a bridge, because a Christian who is not a bridge is not a Christian. I will not pretend that we will reach every single home, but we can do that, because in all the other radio stations, they don't hear anything about religion, anything about Christianity, about the Christian, a Christian faith.
And do you think that Muslims will find something attractive in this broadcast?
We hope that at least we will transmit some music, some songs, religious songs, and also news. We will not enter in politics, to tell you the truth, because we don't have problems. We have already enough problems. But social issues will be discussed. Direct programs, live programs will be there. So maybe some Christians, some Muslims will hear also our voice.
Father Raed hopes to launch the first broadcasts of his new radio station this upcoming Christmas Eve. We wish him all the best. And now we take a peek inside a Vatican institution very close to the Pope's heart. But watch your step. It's usually off limits to the average Jane or Joe. We're inside the Pope's Apostolic Library, and everyone is invited to be quiet. We turn our heads from one side of the frescoed reading room to the other to see disgruntled scholars looking up from their work as we walk in. Our video guide whisks us back through space and time, explaining how, from verbal evolution, man first invented the written word, and how for centuries, to protect and preserve the world's rich, evolving patrimony of handwritten tomes and printed volumes, the Vatican has kept ahead of the times, employing some of the most technically advanced instruments known to man. A state-of-the-art microchip system ensures no volume in the library can get lost amid the mile after mile of bookshelves, or worse, pilfered from the centuries-old institution. The finest photographic equipment and digital scanners, not yet even on the market, record and reproduce the tiniest details of manuscripts dating back to the 3rd or the 4th century. But no, we're not really inside the Papal Library. Only accredited scholars and qualified students can get in there. We're inside the next best thing, a physical room in a virtual world, recreating the Vatican Library's 16th century frescoed Sistine Hall reading room, complete with wooden tables, chairs, and lecterns. Here, like real scholars, we can slip on white gloves and examine exact replicas of ancient illustrated manuscripts on subjects that vary from the nutritional and therapeutic properties of herbs to religious texts, including one of the world's oldest Bibles, the 4th century Codex Vaticanus B, geographical maps, and a guide to falconry. These are only a sampling of the library's vast collection of some 150,000 manuscripts and more than 1.5 million printed books. In fact, if you were to line up all the institution's books in a row, they'd lead you straight to Rome's Fiumicino Airport and back, a trip covering some 60 kilometers. The library also possesses some 1,300 early block print volumes, and one of the world's most important collections of coins and medallions, numbering some 300,000 items. We are in the first room of a very special exhibit celebrating the September reopening of the Vatican Library after 3 years of restoration. It is open to visitors in the Braccio Carlo Magno Hall, to the left of St. Peter's Square, through January 31st. The exhibition is comprised of several sections, including history of the library, manuscripts, drawings and paintings, printed volumes, prints, numismatics, archival services, and restoration and photographic departments. An audio tour accompanies the visitor in one of 5 languages through a series of thematic exhibit rooms, many of which are enhanced by audiovisual effects. Among the items on display are important historical manuscripts dating from the early Christian centuries to the modern era, rare incunabula or block printed books where woodcuts were used to print entire pages, hand-illustrated manuscripts and drawings and prints by master artists, and a selection of rare coins and medals, some dating to the very time of Jesus himself. Perhaps one is among the coins Judas received for his betrayal. But the collection also extends to the Middle East and Asia, with a handsomely illustrated 13th century Arabic love story of Bayad and Riyad, and from Palestine an 11th century Melkite lectionary in Aramaic, the language Jesus himself spoke, and from Burma a 19th century illustrated life of Buddha. 80% of the objects and texts on display are original manuscripts, volumes and sketches, and prints from some of Europe's most renowned artists from the Middle Ages to the Renaissance. Here you'll find a first edition volume of Piranesi's Scenes of Rome, a self-portrait by Gian Lorenzo Bernini, and poetic verses and sketches by Michelangelo, not to mention a bizarre work by Botticelli depicting scenes from the Divine Comedy. Vatican Library restorers are also present at the exhibit to explain how they preserve and repair centuries-old codices and torn or dog-eared pages, damaged bindings, and book covers. Father Cesar Attuire is the Chief Executive Officer of the pilgrimage tour operator Opera Romana Pellegrinaggi, which collaborated in the realization of the exhibit. He explains why it focuses on a history open to the future.
If you think of a place like the library, the Vatican Library, it's a place where people, academics, research students from all over the world come in to study. And it's kind of reserved to a very small number of people. Yet at the same time, inside the Vatican Library, we do have texts that are not only religious, but they are cultural, scientific, and historical. And they have an importance basically for the rest of the world, because even some scientific discoveries started with the materials we have in the Vatican Library. Now, the question was, okay, how can we open this to the general public? Get people who do not know about the existence of the library, and also, to some extent, also sort of like, remove some of the myths about the Vatican Library, because sometimes when you talk about the Vatican Library, people start thinking about secret documents,
the secret archives of the Vatican.
Yeah, secret archives, and that you're going to find, I don't know what kind of, you're going to reveal some kind of grave error or sin of the church, but there's nothing like that in the Vatican Library. So we thought we would, have this exhibition where people could get to know the Vatican Library, get to know what is done in there and the sort of material that is kept in there. And at the same time, there is something that is very interesting, and that leads me to the title of the exhibition, which is A History That Is Open to the Future. The Vatican Library, since its creation, has always been avant-garde, a leader in modern technology. So much so that even today, the technology that is used to preserve, conserve, and even promote the study of the ancient texts is the most up-to-date technology. And for that matter, it's not just, you just can't think of the Vatican Library like this kind of dark room where you have monks with hoods sitting down studying texts that nobody can understand. No, this is a modern place where people try to gather information regarding the past, regarding even scientific research, historical research, biblical research with regard to the past, and then see how this can be made relevant to the future.
I am going to take my kids to see it because I was so impressed by the video. It's really interactive. You can touch the manuscripts. You have videos. You have audio. You're listening to a tour, a guide give you the tour of the facility. It's really engaging, even for young people.
Right. Well, that was what we tried to do, to make it as interactive as possible and also use, the modern technology that we have at our disposal today. And we've introduced a number of topics in there. For example, something that I found extremely amusing is the part that is dedicated to coins, to money. And if you visit that particular area, where you see is in 7 minutes you get the whole history of money trade, starting from when money did not exist. And there was barter trade, people used to exchange goods, to when they started using coins, to the plastic, and now to digital use, because these days with a computer you can do anything. Now, what does that really mean? And how can you interpret this in the light of the gospel? Secondly, there is a very interesting calculation there of how much did the 30 silver coins Judas received when he sold Jesus, how much are they worth today? And according to the analysis that was made by the guys and the experts in the Vatican Library, we're talking of something around 12,000 euros, which would be around $15,000. That's what he sold Jesus Christ for. And these are interesting.
And some of the coins that might be on display there could even have been the coins that Judas himself received.
Absolutely. There are, I don't know whether they're the exact coins, but there are coins taken from the money that was being used in the temple at that time. And, they even explain why. For example, in the gospel, you read that Jesus, when he went violent in the temple and he threw all the money changers out, one would ask why, but why should we have money changers in the temple? And there you find the explanation, because in the rest of Palestine, the money that was being used was of Greek origin. Whereas the temple, being a sacred ground, the priests in the temple would not allow pagan money in. And for that matter, they had their own autochthonous money. And that is why people had to change money coming into the temple. And that's why Jesus was so fed up with these guys. He threw all their tables away and told them not to transform, the temple of the Lord into a thief's den, basically.
What is your relationship with the Vatican?
Well, Opera Romana Pellegrinaggi was created as an organization of the Diocese of Rome. And the Diocese of Rome is part of the Holy See, because at the end of the day, the Pope is Pope because he's Bishop of Rome. And so the Vicariato, as it's called, is part of the establishment of the Holy See. Now, the thing is this. Our actual statutes are found in the document that was created by the Pope to create the diocesan reality of Rome, which is Ecclesia in Urbe, that is the name of the document. And in that document, the Pope actually establishes the existence of the Opera Romana Pellegrinaggi as an organization responsible for receiving pilgrims coming to Rome and also for taking pilgrims to the holy sites around the world. And that is why we form part of the organization of the Holy See.
You look like you've taken a lot of personal satisfaction out of this exhibit. How did you get involved in the actual creation of this exhibit?
Well, we've been in contact with the Vatican Library. We organize other visits to different areas of the Vatican as part of our activities, Opera Romana Pellegrinaggi. And we have been in touch with the Vatican Library. And when they did tell us that they were going to come out with this, the idea of coming out with an exhibition, I thought, well, this could be an interesting occasion to do a little bit of mediation, because here, on the one hand, we have very competent academics, librarians, and at the same time, we are involved with the general public. So how can I take this wealth and help them to translate it into a language that is accessible to the general public? And that is how we started working together, and this is the end result, I think, is quite good, really.
Father Cesar Attuire is the CEO of the pilgrimage tour operator Opera Romana Pellegrinaggi. The exhibit in the Braccio Carlo Magno Hall runs through January 31st. And that concludes our program today. Thank you so much for listening to us here on Vatican Radio. I'm Tracy McClure. Laudato Jesus Christus.